certainly desire an interest in your prayers today. And would like to pull on maybe some things that have already been said and some of the songs that we have heard. I feel like the Lord has given me a burden some time back that a little bit difficult to get away from, so I believed he would be pleased in me sharing this morning. I appreciate our little children, and I'm realizing that time certainly is marching on. It did seem like almost yesterday it was my children. And this morning, I see my grandchildren there. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the song that expressed the desire for us to get back to the basics. The principles that I have, that I feel burdened to challenge us with today, are pretty basic. But we all know that we live in a world that's very complex. Many times it's very difficult to know the direction that things are going and that we are going. And I would like to begin maybe expressing where I feel like that I am personally. I'd like to turn over here to the book of Ecclesiastes in the 12th chapter. It says in the 5th verse, "And when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the street." This part of the chapter is talking about age catching up with us, and us the deterioration that happens physically and maybe in our abilities and capacities to process information and things of that nature. And this verse here in particular talks about being afraid and fears. And many of us have been around those that are advanced in age, and a lot of times one of the greatest hurdles is they have a lot of fears. There's things that they're fearful about. And I don't feel like I'm there yet, but I know it's coming. And I know that there are things that causes me to be fearful and concerned and to worry. I remember in my life a time that a lot of things didn't bother me because I was young, I felt strong, I felt a lot of capabilities, not necessarily self-confidence out of the realm of being pleasing to God, but I felt that the Lord would help us, and I felt capable with the help of the Lord. And now I look on and realize as I get older, there are many, many things that's beyond any ability I might have or anything that I feel like I can impact. So I guess the next thing is to begin to worry and wonder, how's it going to turn out? And how is this going to develop? You know, there's a lot of hype in our world today about climate change. We heard this expressed a little earlier. And, you know, I don't know. I believe the Lord has it all in control. And I don't know what climate is. I'm glad it's changed for this week. Last week I was pretty miserable on the job and pretty sweaty and felt like it was going to really be a scorcher. But this week has been very pleasant for the last of July in southwest Missouri, and I'm very thankful for that. I believe that ultimately our physical climate is in God's hand. I know that the world around us would like for us to believe something different than that. I know the world around us, with all of its knowledge and all of its understanding, would like for us to get on a bandwagon of some sort or another. I believe that the world around us would like for us to be very fearful that we are going to self-destruct because we are in some type of spiral that's out of control that we created ourselves. I do believe that God can overrule man. He does overrule man. I do believe that He is in control of our natural climate, but I would like to talk for the sake of this morning about a different climate. I would like to talk about the social climate that has changed from the time that I was a young man until now. A climate of what's right and what's wrong. A climate that looks like, without God's intervention, is spiraling completely off the charts and out of control. It looks like it's on a course of self-destruction. In fact, we can look in history and see where societies have collapsed because of the same things that are in place in our society today. Many people will try to pass the historical facts off on other factors, but I believe that it is because society collapsed, and I believe it's most likely a judgment of God on those past societies that have failed in many, many ways. So just want you to know that there's some things that I'm worried about, things that cause me to be fearful. And as I think about the changes that have come over our social climate in our world, and wonder, Lord, what's the odds? What's the chances? What can I do? I feel so incapable. I feel so frail and so inept at being able to make an impact. I don't want to adopt a militant attitude, as Brother Michael mentioned there in our prayer request time. I want to have a Christ-like attitude. I'm thinking, too, of another verse over here in Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, and the third verse. It says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." I want to cultivate a social prudence in my heart and in my life. I know that age helps a lot with being prudent. Experience helps. But I believe that sincerity before God is a major element in us being able to be prudent in our life. And prudent, I believe, I didn't just look it up, but I believe it's a word that means the ability to make wise choices and the ability to be able to discern the tones and the tenors of events and circumstances around us. And I believe that this prudence goes a long ways in helping us foresee the evil that can come from a particular direction. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm thankful that the Lord has helped me thus far in my life. I'm thankful for His blessings. I'm thankful for the privilege and the opportunity to work for Him in the capacity that I have. I want to do more. I want to be more effectual. And I want us to think about not just the time and age that we live in and the things that we might observe going on around us. But I think sometimes about the time of the apostles and the when the New Testament was written. And sometimes, for myself anyway, I've kind of had this old perspective that the time of the apostles and living in that age, it would have been such a glorious time to be, have the opportunity to have seen Jesus face to face, and it would have been such a wonderful experience to listen to Paul preach or to be under the anointing of the word when Peter was preaching, and that would have been, it must have been almost like the Garden of Eden. That's sometimes some of the perspective I've had in the past. I'm just being open with you here. But I'll tell you, the more that I have tried to understand what it was like, don't profess to be an expert, I find that the apostles faced a climate that was not unlike ours. I'm thinking just about some historical facts. You can go to history and find this. The book of Romans, for instance, there's various dates, of course, that's been ascribed to it, but it was written somewhere around 54 A.D. And the Emperor Nero became emperor of the Roman Empire that year in 54 A.D. Some of us have read some of Josephus, and Josephus was born about 37 A.D., so was Nero. Nero and Josephus, the one that wrote the Antiquity of the Jews and those kind of works, were born about the same year. And there's something they call the Hellenistic period. This begins somewhere around the time that Alexander the Great died in the first century A.D., is a time span of that. And during that time period, we know that the Greek culture became dominant in the world. The Greek language became the language to know. If they had had air traffic controllers in that time of history, I believe they would have all spoke Greek. It was the language, it was the culture that overshadowed everything else. There were some other things that was in place at that time in history. During this time period, many of the Jewish people that were either left in Babylon and had not come back to help rebuild Jerusalem, and those that were in Judea had abandoned and forsaken the teachings of the law, and they had adopted the culture and the practices of the culture around them. the pagans, the Greeks, and they did this for maybe various reasons. One of them was probably for material advancement or maybe social status in their world that they lived in. And there were things like, you know, that was right during the time of the ancient Olympics, you know. Remember when that started? And the ancient Olympics works kind of like ours do today. They had these games every few years, and there was a real push in the culture for different regions and cities to sponsor athletes for those events. And so consequently, there was a great interest in athletic advancement. The culture promoted the building of theaters, Colosseum, of building something they called a gymnasium, where they went to train and to practice for these sporting events. And there was a dress, an outward appearance that went along with those that were impacted by that society. There was something that was working there that was just as dramatic as the age that we live in. And I don't know about you, but the more I read and find out about this, the more I realize that that society and that culture was impacted just like ours is. And by some of the same things, by some of the same motivational forces, they were impacted by the same types of things. The fact of undress was very very prevalent, especially in those that were the performers or those that had aspirations of being performers in these athletic endeavors. I believe that Paul witnessed some of the same decay morally, socially. He's seen it going on all around, just like we do today. You know, Nero, the one that became emperor approximately the same year that the book of Romans was written, was the one that ordered Paul to be put to death. I'd like to read just a little bit here in the book of Romans. And I hope with what I've said up to this point helps us to get a little bit more of a handle on the burden that he had when he wrote this book. If we went to the back of the book, in my Bible anyway, I don't know if it's in yours, it tells us that Romans was written from Corinthus and sent by Phoebe, servant of the church at Cenchreae. So it was not written from Jerusalem. It was written from a location that was very much immersed in this culture and this climate that Paul was worried about and concerned about. And we're not coming to you today from some foreign land and some place of utopia, but I see it all around where I live. And maybe I don't live in the worst place, but I know that it's everywhere you are, this culture that we're talking about that is deteriorating, and the culture climate that has changed so much in the last 30 years or so. It's been going on before that, but There's been some dramatic changes in my lifetime. And notice here in the first chapter of the first verse, he says, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God. And in the seventh verse, he says, to all that be in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints. You know, I believe today that we're all called to be saints, every one of us. Right in the midst of the culture that we are being impacted by, the Lord is writing to us. He wants to speak to us, not necessarily from my lips of clay, but He wants to speak to our hearts and He wants to speak to our minds. He wants us to realize that every one of us has a call to be saints today. And if we go on down a little bit further in the 16th verse, Paul says, For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. You're called to be saints. We should not be ashamed of the gospel. I believe the antidote for the climate change in our culture is through Jesus Christ. I believe it's a real antidote for the deterioration and the degradation that's in our world today. He goes on to say here, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. The message, the call, the power of God unto salvation is to every one of us. No matter what our lineage is, no matter what our heritage is, he says, For therein is righteousness of God revealed. From faith to faith it is written, The just shall live by faith. He is looking back to Habakkuk, the second chapter and the fourth verse there. He's pointing us back to the prophecies that we would be able to have this type of experience that he's talking about and that we realize today. He says, For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifested in them, for God has shewed it unto them. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, having understood the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. I believe that some of the invisible things of Him is the love of God. I believe the love of God is something that's come from the creation of the world and it can be clearly seen. It's something that can be understood by the things that are made. The things that we see around us, the blessings that we realize that come from the Lord, we recognize it's part of the love of God for His creation. He says, Because that when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. There are many that feel like the wisdom of the world has empowered them and released them and enabled them to realize a potential to be something that they felt like was withheld from them because of the context of maybe the scripture or because of what culture used to be. And today, people feel empowered and enabled because of the wisdom. But it says here, professing them to be wise, they became fools. They changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like corruptible men, into birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. They've changed the glorious, godly precepts the basics of love, the basics of life, into something that is made more like just animal, like idolatrous things. They're worshiping things like it's talking about here. It says, "Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness." We know what this says. "Through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their bodies between themselves." Paul witnessed this. It was prevalent in the society that he lived in. It was something that concerned him. It's something that worried him. He was writing this book to those that were called to be saints. The message today from my heart is that we recognize that we're called to be saints. That we recognize the climate change that is happening and has happened all around us today. He said they changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause God gave them over to vile affections. Oh, it goes into descriptions here that used to be something that was an atrocity to us. And we have become incrementally numbed to this because of the climate change that's going on all around us. He says, maybe I won't read the details, but we know what it's talking about here. He says, "And even as they did not like," in the 28th verse, "to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which were not convenient." They're filled with all types of despicable things in our society all around us. It's blatantly being promoted and advertised. It's pushed. Incorporated and trying to be ingrained in things that comes our way, and many times we realize that something has been pushed over on us and we didn't see it coming. I remember one time see a brother in the congregation. We've been good friends for many years. I remember one time we went somewhere together. And while we were there, somebody was telling us something that was supposed to be a funny story. And after we got back in our vehicle to leave the place, he turned to me and he said, "I didn't realize what they were talking about." You know, the enemy tries to do that to us today. He tries to slip something in. It's so permeated, it's so infiltrated in our social climate all around us. And there are times that we will be, we'll feel like we've been tricked or tripped up. And this is some of the thing that worries me, not only for myself, but for my children and my grandchildren. And I want you to know that I appreciate you young parents and your efforts to raise your children. I know the Lord will go with you, just like He was there with us. I read some of the commentators' comments about these verses, and here's one comment that I found. Their idolatry was punished with the unnatural lust, which was as horrible of a dishonor to their body as their idolatry was to their God, or to God. So the practices we see going on, we know they're not natural. We know they're not godly. We know they're not something that's acceptable in God's sight. And there's consequences for all of that in this world many times. And there's consequences not only physically, but emotionally. And these kind of things are as much of an abomination to the natural body that the Lord has given us, our natural minds that He has given us, as idolatry or bowing down to some graven images to the God Himself. So I'd like to look at another verse, try to move on. I've been trying here with this passage, these scriptures in Romans, to help us realize the cultural climate that the Apostle Paul was exposed to and the elements that he was dealing with. It's hard to really get a hold of how corrupt society was at that time in many ways. But I'd like to turn over here to Revelation, the 20th chapter. And I want us to notice in the first three verses, and it says, I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till 1,000 years be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. Notice in this passage of Scripture that he refers to the devil and Satan as an old serpent. An old serpent. I don't know how long snakes typically live, or something that would be considered a serpent. Sometimes we find out some reptiles like turtles might live 150 years or more, but I don't know that a serpent lives 150 years, but he called this an old serpent. And I'll tell you how old I think it was, and hopefully you won't disagree with me. I believe that this serpent was the same serpent that came and talked to Eve. You know, she was tempted by a serpent to set up something in place of God. And many, many, many years and generations before the Apostle John's time, and when he wrote this book and this revelation, that serpent came and introduced to Eve worshiping something besides the God of creation. And it severed the fellowship. It was something that was an abomination for mankind to be involved in. And as we look here, he says that this old serpent, the devil and Satan, he was bound. His power was hindered for 1,000 years. Now, 1,000 years is a very long time. And without going into a lot of explanation, I want you to know that what I believe. I believe that this is the paganism that was in Paul's time. And we know that after Paul's time, that paganism as a state religion, as impacting society, it did collapse. It did collapse. And Christianity became the religion of the state, albeit it was not true Christianity. But there was a great binding of paganism, and has been for a long time in the world. But if we go on down to the 7th verse, it says, when 1,000 years are expired, Satan will be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, together with them together to battle, the number of whom is 1,000, as the sand of the sea. So we live in an age. There's been some changes, a climate change that has come upon us. And there has been some changes to where this worship of something besides, you know, our nation and the world over doesn't have the reverence for the God of creation that it had 30 years ago, 100 years ago. You think of the impact that God had in the writing of our Constitution. You know, there were some people that was part of writing our Constitution that we might have trouble fellowshipping today because of the things they had in their own life, but they had a fear of God about them. And that's just evaporated over time. And people, there's been a change in the climate. The undertone of knowing that I have to reckon with a God. And it's imperative that I come to grips with my position with God and doing business with Him and being reconciled with Him before I pass out into eternity. There's people, maybe our neighbors sometimes, that they don't know anything about Jesus. They haven't heard the Bible stories. And if we say, do you remember this? You ever heard the story about Jonah being swallowed by a great fish? And they, no, I've never heard that story. I never heard the story of Moses being born and put in a little basket and put in the river and Pharaoh's daughter. Never heard those stories. God created the world? Oh, it's just, I know there's some people, there's some strange people out there that believe in creation. But they've absorbed, there's been a change. There's been a lot of other changes too in our climate of our society. But I believe we live in an age where this power of setting something else up in the place of God, whether it be the sports arena, whether it be the theater, whether it be the actual worship of a deity that's set up, that's made with hands, all of these things are part of, as we've heard, opening a little door and letting something in. And He opens a door for something else. And that one opens a door for something else. It's all the product of choices that people have made over many generations now. I'm just the generation in my time that is looking on and recognizing that we're living in a time where the climate's different. It's different than when my parents were this age. It's different than when my grandparents were this age. It's different than when the forefathers of our nation wrote some of our laws and our Constitution. It was different. It's just different. The enemy is becoming more free. I don't know how long we have in this old world, but I know that God will be there with us. He will help us in the days ahead. So I'd like to talk for a little while, with your permission, about an antidote that I believe will be effectual. Because I don't like to leave us with just this impending gloom and doom and realizing that we live in a bad time of the history of man. I don't like for us to think that it's just something that we're going to have to succumb to. Because the enemy wants us to believe that as time goes on, he's got you. And you're not going to be able to escape his clutches. So I'd like to turn to Exodus, the 4th chapter, and notice what the writer says here. In Exodus, the 4th chapter, in the first verse, if we read the 3rd chapter, we find that this is where God was talking to Moses about his plan for the Israelite nation and his plan for Moses and what he wanted Moses to be able to do. And we find here in the first verse it says, "And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, For they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. You know, many times that's a prevailing thought. When I endeavor to share something, I feel like the Lord's burden with me. They won't believe you. They won't listen to you. And they sure won't incorporate anything that you might suggest. You know, that's one of the things that the devil wants us to feel. If you're endeavoring to try to give someone else some guidance or direction in their life. And Moses felt the same thing. And I believe he felt overwhelmed. I believe he felt like that. I believe he seen the need. I believe he felt the need. But I think he felt like, this is so much bigger than me. There's, what can I do? What can you do about the social climate that we're in today? What is it that that you could do that would make a dramatic impact and turn things around? Wouldn't you like to turn things around? I would. I'd like to turn things around to the basics, where people loved one another and respected one another, where they were willing to be wholesome and virtuous. I wish I could turn it around. I wish there was some dramatic thing. I would like for our leaders to have Damascus Road experiences. I'd like for revival to break out in our nation. Be wonderful, wouldn't it? But just looking on from my perspective and knowing my abilities and incapabilities and all of that, I feel like Moses. He said, Lord, they won't believe me. They won't believe that that you've even talked to me. They'll think I've just had some kind of fanciful idea. The next verse says, and the Lord said unto him, what is in thy hand? So I want to tell us this morning that God is going to wants to talk to us today about what's in your hand. And he said, a rod. Now, I know that some of you brethren around here, when you get dressed in the morning, one of the things you put on is a little leather holder on the side of your, on your belt. Now, some of you, it may be something that holds a screw gun. And some of you, it might be a pair of pliers. And others may have this special little multi-tool. It's just part of your dress. You don't feel equipped for the day unless you have your multi-tool on the side or your pair of channel locks, or some of you have a box knife that you carry all the time, and it's not because of it. It's just part of your trade. It's part of who you are. It's just something that you feel like something's missing if it's not there. You know, I feel like that rod of Moses's was kind of like that. It's something that Moses had with him all the time. He didn't think about it. My occupation, my calling in life. This is something I use on an everyday basis. If I get up and I leave my dwelling place in the morning, I pick up my rod. And here I go. I use it for all kinds of things. And those of you that carry that tool, whatever it is, I know that you have found new uses for it all along. There's always, how do I achieve what I'm trying to do? I think Moses was very skillful with his rod. I don't know what all he did with it, but it was something he used every day. And it was so common that he wasn't even thinking about it. And the Lord said, what do you got in your hand? And he said, a rod. And then we find in the next verse, God told him he wanted him to do something with it. And he began to use that to build his confidence and to give him a direction of what he was supposed to do with his life and what God wanted him to do. So I'm thinking this morning about something that we all have, or most all of us have, very few of us here that don't have this. And it's something that I believe is the antidote for our social climate change that is all around us. I'd like for us to go to Proverbs, the 22nd chapter. And in the 6th verse, he says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's in your hands. All you little children that were up here, I want you to know you're precious in Jesus' sight. I want all you parents to know these children are the most valuable thing you have. I want you to know that they're in your hand. They're what you have in your hand right now. One of these days, and it won't be very long, and I'm speaking from experience, your children will be looking you in the eye. And they'll be making decisions that have been impacted by the years that you have between now and then. They're going to be making choices that's impacted by what you have in your hand right now. And I believe with all of my heart today that the only antidote that we have for the climate change that's going on around us is in our children. I believe it's the only thing that's going to really make a change. I believe the Lord can work on hearts, but it's something, this is in our hands. And Lord, help us not to allow what's in our hands to slip out of it. I'd like to go now to Titus, the 2nd chapter. And I'd like to look beginning in the 1st verse. He says, speak thou the things which become sound doctrine. And I want what we say and have said this morning to be sound. I want it to be something that is stable. It's not something that can be gainsaid by doubts and fears and speculations, but I want it to be sound. He says that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. Those of us that are fathers, we have a tremendous responsibility to be stable. A tremendous responsibility to be steadfast. A tremendous responsibility to be a pillar that we heard about. A pillar not only in the church, but a pillar in our homes. An anchoring point. Something that is a good reference and not a negative reference. Someone, it says here, the aged men would be sober. He's not talking about someone that never smiles, but someone that makes informed and mature choices in life. Grave. Someone that sees the seriousness of life. I want to be my children's friend, but I want to be their father more than that. It says to be temperate. You know, we're all subject to the susceptibility to be intemperate. Intemperate in our ambitions of gaining things that causes us to abandon our family. Intemperate in our desire for fulfillment and satisfaction. We're susceptible to those temptations. But he says here, speak the things that sound doctrine. That the aged men be temperate. that they be able to govern their desires and their appetites. That they would be something that the next generation would want to emulate. I remember a few years ago, it's been quite a while ago, there was quite a push for older ones to be mentors to younger ones. And over the years, I've had opportunity to try to mentor to various degrees other young men besides my own sons. And I think sometimes of the responsibility that that is. And I think not only as a father, but as men amongst God's people, we ought to seek these characteristics that would cause others to want to be mentored by us. There's this element that our young men need to know. They need to be able to see. You know, the world has something they call superheroes. You ever heard that term? And it is something that is depicted with all kinds of graphics and things that are really completely absurd. It's beyond anything natural. But, you know, I can remember before I even knew what the word superhero was, I can remember really looking up to my father and feeling like that when I grew up, I wanted to be like him. And you know, that's something that we need to cultivate. We need to cultivate that, not so much telling our children, watch me, you might learn something. I've done that too. But to live a life that they see and they know, that's what I want to be like. There's strengths of character there. I want that in my life. I want to be able to display that kind of courage and that kind of strength. Oh, I remember those times that my father let me feel real special because he let me do things that my mama would have worried about. I remember going with him when I probably was in the way. I've told you some of these stories, and please bear with me. I remember going with him when he'd go out to get an old combine ready for wheat harvest. And him, the way he done it was chiseling off those rivets that held the sickle sections on, and then using a cold rivet to rivet that back in there. And Dad didn't have all the right tools, but he had the right technique of tapping the rivet until it swelled up and was tight, and then he would mushroom the head. He didn't have the little tool that formed the right head. But I can remember going out there and him wanting me to hold up that probably about a 4-pound hammer underneath the bottom of that rivet while he tapped on the bottom, and him just insisting that I had to hold it up. You got to hold it tight, son. And it was almost more than I could do to hold up a 4-pound hammer up against the bottom of that that sickle. And seeing him with minor injuries and him not taking the time to bandage it up, you know, slinging the blood off of his finger and because he had cut himself a little bit and going ahead with his task at hand. And then later on, riding with him, I was really small, folks. I was really small. And Dad would I can remember just barely being able to get a hold of that bottom step on the ladder to get up in that old combine and swinging myself up. And Dad didn't like to stop, so you had to kind of catch it while it was moving and get scrambled up there. Now, that's kind of dangerous, wasn't it? Y'all mothers might be careful here. Just bear with us. But we'd scramble up in there, and Dad would say, "Here, you want to drive?" Well, what little boy don't want to drive a piece of machinery like that? "Sure, I want to drive." So he'd let me turn the steering wheel, and he'd scramble down out of that. He said, "I'm just going to check things and make sure it's all working all right." So Dad would climb down. I'm going through the field at a slow pace. And he would climb down and walk around just to see if anything was making funny noises and all of that. And then he'd climb back in. I want to tell you, there were bonds built on days like that. And there was no superhero that was better than my dad. And when some grade school boy was threatening that their dad could beat up somebody else's dad, I knew they didn't have a chance with mine. I had no question of what I was. You hear me? I had no question of what I was. I had no question of the course that I wanted to go in life. Because my father made me part of his life. Aged men ought to be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith. You know, I've seen my father go through a time in his life where he struggled with feeling capable and sufficient. I've seen him go through a time where he felt overwhelmed by circumstances. And at the time, I struggled with thinking that maybe I brought it on. Because of his courage, we done things that caused him to worry. I remember when my father and mother went shopping and we were early teenagers, my brother and I. They got back, and we'd taken the engine out of my truck, and we had it all apart. If it was a bolt, we took it out. And I later on, when my dad was struggling, I wondered, you know, if what we done brought this on. But I want to tell you what I did see during that time. I seen my dad persevere in his relationship with the Lord. I never seen him throw in the towel and say, "I give up and I quit." He was sound in faith. I never seen him stop his prayers. I never seen him stop his reading of the scripture. No matter how many times he came to the meetings of the saints and came to an altar of prayer, I seen him sound in faith. You want to know what one of the antidotes is that'll help our children? Men, we need to be sound in faith. We cannot decide that I'm just too overwhelmed and that's just an accessory. No, the pattern that was set before me was this was the essence of life. He was sound in faith. In charity and in patience. Oh, I know all of us men have our times that we feel like we've been patient long enough. And it's time for things to change and somebody needs to get up and do something. I've had those times and my father had those times too. But I've seen him with a lot of patience. A lot more patience than the people that I've witnessed that didn't have the Lord. A lot more patience than the ones that would throw their tools and dent up the wall and stomp on somebody else's hood because something didn't go right. I've seen my dad with a lot of patience. I've seen others that have exhibited this, and I want to tell you this is part of the antidote. It's part of the pattern. Oh, don't you want your children to grow up and to know who they are? To know the type of person that God has designed them to be? I just want to tell you, maybe we'll get on a little further in this, but he says the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. Behavior that becometh holiness. You know, my parents were pretty simple, but I believe my mother portrayed this. I believe that our mothers today should portray this too. It says, the aged women, that they be in behavior that becometh holiness. Were your objectives and your goals and your intentions is to exhibit and to portray a wholesomeness, a serenity, a confidence that you know who you are and that your willingness to live a life pleasing for the Lord. He says here, not false accusers. I believe that just talking about problems and stirring the pot and all of that is part of that. Not given to much wine, teachers of good things. Teachers of good things. He goes on to say that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands. You know, I've worked with those people that would talk to their spouses, and at the end of the phone conversation, they would say, love you, bye. It's okay. I think that's appropriate. But you know, there's more to learning how to love your husband than that. What does it mean to love your husband? Does that mean to just dress in a certain way that makes him excited? Is that what it means? Is that what the women professing godliness and becoming holiness, is that what you're supposed to teach them? How do you teach your children, your daughters, to love their husbands? To know how to maybe fix a meal he enjoys? That's pretty good. There's more to it than that. You know how to teach them that you respect him? You know, men don't always make the right decisions, but they do make a lot of right decisions. And when you gainsay every choice he makes, you're not teaching them how to love their husbands. It says here that women professing godliness ought to teach the younger ones how to be sober, how to love their husbands, to love their children. Loving their children is more than just gratifying them. It's learning how to really nurture them and give them the boundaries and the limits that they need in their life. To be discreet. To be discreet. What does that mean? I believe it means to conduct ourselves in a manner that's not provocative. Chaste. Morally clean and pure. Keepers at home. Now that one's out of date. To teach your children to be a keeper at home. You know, our social climate is vastly different there now than it used to be. But one of the antidotes is to teach your daughters how to be a keeper at home. You know, if you're bored with housework, if you're bored with laundry, if you're bored with fixing meals and mending, oh, that's another one. I wonder how many even have a sewing machine today. It's no wonder that people grow up confused and feel like that they don't know what they are. You know, I believe that we've been severely and negatively impacted by the move in our social climate change to adopt the equality of genders to the point that's down to a choice. And what did Proverbs say? We ought to train up a child in the way they want to go? No, in the way they should go. We need to instill in them the carefulness, the virtues, the direction. I think sometimes we, in our efforts to become professional, in our efforts to become good providers, we have, and to provide the things that we have to have from Walmart and Macy's and all of those other places, that we forgot the value and we begin to disdain the value of learning how to do those things that were so character building in past generations. To learn how to be innovative, to solve problems, and work together, to find a solution in the time of seemingly no solutions. Ladies, I know this is one of those things like Moses didn't feel like would be heard. Teach your daughters how to be a wife, how to have a pattern of good works, how to be obedient to their husbands in a biblical fashion, how to know how to support him, not you go get a job and he sits at home. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But how to support him in his career, in his trade, whatever. Learn how. Teach them how to not find fault. I know men have faults. I know sometimes I went to work with a fellow one time and his perspective of one brand of tool was a crude finish club. That was one brand of tool. And I know sometimes that maybe you've got the perspective that that's what men are. But I'd like for you to consider, this is someone, you want your daughters, you want your sons to be more than that. And you know, I believe the Lord has a plan to fit us, to polish us, to to make us a beautiful picture, to make us an antidote for the world around us and the climate change that has happened. And I'm thinking that it probably will continue to happen unless the Lord intervenes. He says to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things shewing thyself a pattern of good works, teaching them the discipline of performing under duress. Oh, that's so valuable. It builds character. It causes them to realize they can with the help of the Lord. He says here, in doctrine shewing uncorruptness. Fathers, we cannot constantly be changing our perspective and falling out of fellowship here and into fellowship over there. We need to have a direct spiritual direction in our hearts and in our minds. He says, uncorruptness and gravity. Oh, are we giving them a pattern of uncorruptness? Or do they see us being willing to take advantage of situations, and maybe it's financial, and maybe it's people's good will or whatever. Lord, help us to not have corruption in that. It says sound speech that cannot be condemned. Oh, we heard earlier that, you know, sometimes Daddy says, and let's make sure what we're teaching them is when Daddy says, it's valid. And mothers, please don't tell them that Daddy don't understand. If Daddy don't, take it up with him later, but don't tell the children Daddy don't understand. We want our children to be stable. We want them to be secure. We want them to know who they are. He says that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. Oh, Lord, help us to give our children something that they know that if I will follow this pattern, that it'll be something that the world can't get. There's no question. Those folks have integrity. I had a neighbor of mine just recently. Oh, it's been in the last year. He was trying to do something. He needed a post hole digger or something, you know, one of these manual things. And I wasn't at home, but he'd called on the phone, and he wanted whatever it wanted. He said, I just knew that you would have one, because I knew that that you're that type of person. Lord, help us to have the goods on hand. Help us to have the reputation of integrity and stability. And, you know, I hope you don't take this wrong, but we're missing it when we don't cultivate those life skills of learning how to do things that will help us in our everyday. Whether it's, I'm not suggesting we go back to washing clothes on a rub board and cooking on an open fire and hunting for our meat on the table, but I am encouraging that we learn. If you're a professional in an occupation and you don't have calluses on your hand, learn something. Pass it. Help your young sons and help your daughters to learn the trades, to learn something that will help them identify with who they are. This is the only antidote we have. If we don't give it to them, they're going to grow up feeling like what's happened to our society all around us. It's the only antidote that I know how to do. It's the thing that's in our hand. It's the thing that we must follow through with. I'd like to go try to finish here real quickly. Thank you for your patience. I'd like to look briefly at Psalms 127. I think you're familiar with that. It talks about children and them coming into your home and in your life. And he ends up the chapter here with a verse that is so outstanding in my mind. He's talking about a father here, and he says, "Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." I want our next generation to be confident in who they are. I want them to be confident in their relationship with the Lord. I want them to be confident in being able to address difficulties in life. Do I want them to ever forget that I'm dad and that I might have a little bit of information that help them along? No, I don't want them to do that. I always want to feel needed. But I want them to be capable. I want them to be able to stand on their own hind legs. I want them to be able to address the perplexities of life. And in 2 Timothy 1 and 2, I'd like to finish there very quickly. 2 Timothy 1 and 2. I'm sorry, 1 and 12. He says, "For the which cause I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day." Apostle Paul says, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ," in Romans. In Timothy here, he says, "I am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day." He says, up above that, he says, "I am not ashamed, for I know in whom I believe. I know, I'm convinced." And I'm going to tell you this morning, I know that if you will take the objective of incorporating your children in your life and make sure your life is sober, is vigilant, is careful, that you're cultivating the attributes that will leave the world around us that can't gainsay or resist, then we're giving our children something. I'm fully persuaded if we do this, if you will teach them the trades of life, how to love their husbands, how to love their wives, how to, whatever it is, how to fix the plumbing or put the shingles on or cook the meals and do the laundry, all of those things, and have a peace and a joy. You know, I thought before I got married, I thought that all women sang while they done things around the house, because that's what my mother did. She sang the songs from this book, and she just went around. She was vacuuming or washing dishes. You'd hear her singing this song. And I found out that not all women do that, but I'm going to tell you that you sisters can really promote a peace, a contentment, a happiness when you're going about those things that are mundane, and you can paint a picture that you're daughters want to emulate. And we as men, we have to pay. Oh, take your sons with you. Incorporate them in what you're doing. Help them to realize who they are. And I'm fully persuaded that this is an antidote for the climate change that's going on all around us. You pray for me.